It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, hey, y'all. Welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. We're so excited about tonight's guest. Judy Austin is joining us here in just a few minutes. Now, if you're on Facebook, chances are you've already liked Judy's popular Rose Cottage page. If not, I want you to follow the link on the show page tonight and connect with her on Facebook. She's just a delightful person I know you'll want to get to know. Now, tonight we're going to hear all about how Judy created an international following of rose lovers on Facebook and the stories that inspired it all.
Hey, everyone. I agree with Chris. Tonight, you will be inspired by Judy's story. And she's in the virtual studio. We'll get started right after this word from our good friends at Rose Mania. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Well, it's time to talk roses. So, hey, Judy, welcome to Rose Chat.
Welcome. And first of all, thank you so much, Chris and Teresa, for having me on Rose Chat Radio tonight.
Hey, Judy, we want to start out by hearing how you went about starting the Rose Cottage Project on Facebook.
Well, it was day by day, and it was really hard to think of the next day. The first week was written information about mother's roses, starting with the white ones and traveling through the spectrum of colors to the darkest purple, also including the year, the breeder, country, and the type of rose. In the beginning, photographs of bouquets of roses were uploaded. Many times they were roses next to the same brass lamp on my bedside table, taken with the camera of the iPad, but later on using a better camera. I found that the iPad photos, they weren't sharp enough, plus they had to be emailed to myself and then downloaded and then into iPhoto and then edited.
Gathering all the information is tedious, but I'm so glad you did because I love knowing all the details about the roses I grow. It seems the more I know about them, it's the more I love them. It's kind of like people, I think. And I'm so glad that you went to the trouble to have good pictures because good visuals are so important in telling your story. Judy, could you tell us what you've learned during this process?
I've learned so much about roses from other parts of the world, Germany, India, Australia, Canada, Bermuda's mystery roses, France, the Petrovic roses, Italy, and of course the oldest roses that are still grown today. I also learned that there's a big difference between a snapshot of a rose and an edited photograph of a rose. The last year and a half of the project, I spent hours and hours in the editing mode, making the image the most perfect, beautiful, and breathtaking picture I could to share. The quality of photos grew in this time period, as well as the eye for balance and light, subject, and color. The camera I use is an ESO Rebel T3, and now I use only natural light. Sometimes the images I have sometimes the images have an overhead light and are turned manually, and they look like the light's coming from underneath.
Oh, my. Sometimes I look back at my pictures, and if you look at them just right, they look gorgeous. But if you look at them too close, I'm thinking, ooh, I think I need to spend a little more time. I'm just snapping. But the process that you've gone through, you're getting the quality that I might be missing. And how fascinating. I don't think I know about the Bermuda mystery roses. That's something I think I've never heard of. But I have noticed that the pictures you post on Facebook, that shows that you take extra efforts in how they look. Well, I can imagine that this project has been an amazing opportunity to meet rose lovers all over the world. So do you have a few stories that you could tell us about them?
Yes, it was a great opportunity to bring rose lovers from all over the world together with this project. The first persons that come to mind are Ganesh Shirky and Mahadeep Kobel from India. These two men have been friends and supportive, also followers, from the very beginning. I also do adore the Verus roses from India. Let's see, TJ David from Sacramento, California. I have worked alongside TJ in one of the International World Peace Rose Gardens in Atlanta. He's a really kind man. Let's see, Matthias Miland and Paul Zimmerman, John A. Starnes. He's a breeder from Florida. Of course, the Redneck Rosarian. And Mark Washington. the most interesting part of the equation is that there's 45 countries in 39 different languages that have liked or that are following the Rose Cottage. And only a fourth of these people are in the USA. And the most popular city in the world is Bangkok, Thailand. Prune, India was the first most popular city for a long time. My hometown city of Atlanta is third on the list, and Paris is fourth.
Judy, that is just phenomenal. 45 countries, 39 different languages. Totally impressive. And did you say that Thailand was the most popular?
Bangkok, Thailand is the most popular right now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad that Atlanta at least got in the top three. Hey, this is supposed to be a two-year project. Where do you go after that?
Well, in my wildest imagination, I'd love to go to France to photograph all of the Milan roses, or perhaps be hired by a wholesale rose company to photograph their yearly catalog. Well, one can always dream. Or maybe I'll go back to the garden.
Well, Judy, if you get hired for any of that, I'll gladly go along and carry your camera bag for you.
That's right. Well, I have continued for over a month on and off after 2 years, but the commitment of every day 4 to 7 photographs and hours of research, I feel like it's behind me. The project is fun and entertaining. There's enough information for 2 books. There's over 4,000 images. There's tons of art in the public domain. And there's information about methods and organic gardening.
That's so impressive. I 1 year for the June, the Rose Month of June, I tried to post on my blog every day. I think I did make it, but that was even hard to keep up with, to post about a different rose that was blooming in the garden that day. But, Judy, you keep dreaming, because sometimes dreams come true when you least expect it. And with all of this research you've done and with all of the photography that you've learned, you've positioned yourself. Maybe your dream job is just out there. Wouldn't that be just perfect? Judy, let's go back a bit and fill in our listeners on how the project started.
Back in 2008, I did a PowerPoint presentation of all of Mother's roses so I could get them straight. And they were the names of the roses, and I found them on show ribbons, garden tags, and her garden journals. The sun had bleached all the names off the tags, and course, Mother couldn't remember anything except that she loved her roses. In the beginning, I was inspired by a man named Jerry Burns. He's a friend and a photographer who is now retired. But Jerry was working on a project shooting a portrait a day for a year to publish a book. He called it 21 Days Can Change Your Life. So he came to the house on day 32 and shot me for a couple of hours. And I thought if I got 21 days under my belt, that that would be a long time. But I had no idea that it'd go on for 2 years.
Oh, my. Any surprises with the project along the way?
Oh, sure. Well, the first winter, I was at a loss of what to do. So I ended up researching the floral industry from beginning to end. I asked almost the same question at every florist. Do you wear protective gloves while handling flowers? And always they said no. But the trail led me to Nevado roses and fair trade flowers, environmentally and socially certified roses of Ecuador, and the Rainforest Alliance roses. The second winter, I edited unpublished photographs until I was blue in the face. Also, it was fun to follow a thread such as companion planting or organic products or old roses or respected breeders, old and new, or just anything I could come up with on a weekly basis.
I can tell you, as a former florist, I never wore gloves. You just wanted to touch them. You just, you know, wanted to be close to them. So, you know, just kind of get into your work, and wearing gloves is like the last thing on your mind. Judy, when I first started reading your Facebook post, I would just get lost there because you did take us everywhere. You know, it wasn't just the beautiful pictures, but whatever you were researching at the time, there's links to all this different information, and you can just go from one thing to the other before you know it. Hours have gone by. So those who continue to read this, they're going to learn. They have the opportunity to learn volumes. So your work is going to go on for a long, long time. I want to move now to talk about Judy's roses. How many roses do you grow?
Well, today in the garden there's over 100, but I'd say back in 1996 during Mother's best years, probably over 250, but mostly because the gardens were lined with dozens of miniatures along the edges. Over the last 10 years, droughts killed most of them. I think there's 3 or 4 miniatures still left.
I bet it was beautiful. Did I read somewhere that you had tried your hand at hybridization?
Well, no, but I haven't, but I have rooted many roses, including the old historical ones. The rooted ones I enjoy that are blooming in the garden right now are Pretty in Pink, Brilliant Pink Iceberg, The Fairy, Crown Princess Margarita, and Cremosa Superior. But I do have one rose that has a natural hybridization of Dr. Huey. You know, everybody seems to know who Dr. Huey is, but it's a dark magenta 4-inch centrifolia. It's an amazing rose. I only saw about 6 this year.
So what are your favorite ones?
Of the ones that I have rooted, I love Pretty in Pink because you just can't do anything wrong with Pretty in Pink.
It is a pretty one.
I guess my favorite roses, that's a really hard question, but there's so many roses that I like for so many different reasons. When I first laid eyes on Dainty Bess at Smith Gilbert Garden, the color and the simplicity of the bloom just took me away. So I love that rose. Multiplus, the butterfly rose, it's got a charm all of its own with the changing colors. In my garden, Belinda's Dream and the Earthkind selections are the roses that they work for everybody. I like Francis Milan, that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the heavily scented ones like Melody Parfume and Chrysler Imperial. I love them all. Much like people, there's always something special to enjoy.
So true.
This past winter, with the temperatures down into the teens twice, 2 weeks in a row, and ice and snow, I lost a dozen or so of the old, mostly the old hybrid teas.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the polar vortex, that just really got to a lot of us, especially up here. We thought we were on the polar north for sure. But you have to mention the Tavlis. That is one big-time favorite of Mr. Van Cleve. He's probably going to weigh in on that one.
It certainly is. And not only is it a favorite in our garden, it's a favorite of the neighborhood children. It's sort of planted at the front of our house on the side. And a couple of the little girls in the neighborhood spied it one day, and, you know, it's two or three different colors all at one time, and they all had to have cuttings of it to take home with them. So, and you know, we have dug that rose up and moved it three or four times, and, you know, as soon as you move it, I think, well, it's going to die, and it just bounces right back, and now, we have to cut it off the house every year.
It is a pretty thing, for sure. Judy, I'm interested to know, are you an organic gardener, or do you spray your roses?
No. When I was much younger, I lived on large farms out in the countryside, and light aircraft flew over just indiscriminately spraying cotton fields and soybeans while folks worked and children played outside. One summer, I was shaking seven dust, packed in a stocking on my tomatoes and had a strong seizure. Today I would like to think there's less risk and exposure, but chemicals, they are big money. It's a huge big money industry. Yes, I am an organic gardener, and I love the compost. I have been for a very long time. I usually have about three composts going at one time. I just start building a new one. It's cheaper to be organic, but one must have patience. It's really the best for the bugs, the bees, and especially people. In 2013, a toxicology study on Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's, it summarized that there's a strong correlation between chronic exposures to pesticides causing an increased prevalence of dementia. Mother sprayed for the whole time she tended her gardens. When I cleaned out the greenhouse of chemicals and pesticides plus sprayers, it filled a huge trash can. So, no, I don't do any. Everything I do is organic. Good question.
Yeah. So now that we're talking about your garden, could you share some of your favorite tips on growing roses with our listeners?
Sure. Well, I'd say give them room to grow, and depending on the size of the mature rose, you know, and lots of full sun. First on my list would be to buy roses that have been known to be easy to grow and that have excellent ratings. You know, whether a person loves old garden roses or miniatures, hybrid teas, floribundas, grandifloras, or landscape roses, I'd say choose wisely and invest in aged horse manure. I'd get to know your local feed and seed store, and also get to know the folks that own horses in your surrounding area.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And if there's not any around, you can always order Annie Haven's all-natural soil conditioners. Her Moo Poo Tea works wonders on roses, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. So where do you buy your roses, Judy?
Lately, the ones have been purchased that I have right now from Pike's Nursery, just a mile away. But I do have permission to cut any of the roses for rooting from Barrington Hall in Roswell, because I volunteer in the gardens. Almost all of the roses have been gifts from my children that are new. and I've either given them the name of the rose or a company or just an idea of what I'd enjoy. All the other ones have been rooted.
Nice collection. What about your organic? So what are your biggest pests in the garden that you have to battle?
Japanese beetles, Bermuda grass, crabgrass, sawgrass. Lately I've been sheet mulching with cardboard and weeding every day. I can't wait until the oak leaves start falling, and then I'll heavily mulch for the winter. But also the rose rosetta virus, it's inescapable. I haven't seen it in my garden, but I've seen it in many public gardens, including yesterday, looking at the landscape drift roses that the city of Marietta planted along the streets. They all have the virus. But they've been planted way too close together, and they have little space to grow between the concrete borders and the streets with the cars and the trucks whizzing by. It's interesting that every place I've seen the virus, there's been high, heavy traffic, lots of concrete surrounding the gardens, electrical substations, and roses, of course, planted way too close together.
Sometimes when you see those public plantings, I wonder if they're planted and left and people don't, you know, maybe prune them or take care of them or even notice when one's getting sick before, you know, it has a chance to infect all of them. So I've seen the same thing along the roadsides here, and it just seems like it's allowed to run rampant.
Well, I think you're both hitting on something that's very important. A lot of municipalities want to plant roses, you know, to brighten up their cityscapes, but they oftentimes lack the knowledge of how to care for them properly. And, you know, when they do these mass plantings and they don't go in and do a very severe pruning in the early spring and actually tend those rose beds. I mean, all of us know that you have to tend your roses. And, for big cities, a lot of times they just plant them and leave them. We've got to work on changing that mentality.
Yeah. Well, they are easy care, but what's no care? You know, easy care and no care are two different things. I remember at one time Chris and I heard Jacques Ferrar talk about, you know, caring for even the knockouts and the drift roses that are very easy care and beautiful bloomers. But he suggested that always cutting them back by a third, because with this mite that is the culprit, oftentimes it's up in the top part, and if you're keeping them trimmed, which is what we do to all of our roses here, then you're eliminating a lot of the risk. So it's not going to eradicate the problem, but, you know, and just visiting them and seeing signs so that you can eliminate quickly before it spreads. So, you know, that's our little dissertation on rose rosette. But it is a heartbreaker. I've lost about 4 roses. I have a lot of roses. I have close to 200, and I've lost 4. But I don't want to lose any, not that way. If I shovel prune them, well, that's another story. But I don't want rose rosette taking them away. So, you know, that's something that's shovel pruning. Well, you know, that just happens. But when we're talking about pests, I'm just wondering, in my garden, for years, the bane of my existence in July was Japanese beetles, but for the last 2 years, I haven't seen any. Have you been seeing Japanese beetles down there in Marietta?
Wow. Do you have a pool by chance?
No pool.
Okay. My girlfriend that has a pool has no Japanese beetles, but this year they stayed over 6 weeks. I picked them by hand.
Oh, no.
They did. They stayed a long time. I picked them by hand, and they came by the hundreds. My idea this year was to cut the roses and enjoy them, but then they ate the foliage. So now it's taken this many, 6 weeks, for the roses to recover. So that's a long time.
Well, it's devastating here when we had them.
Uh-huh. I put them in a jar of soapy water, and just for the fun of it, I gave it a good hard shake and set it back out in the hot sun. And I think I had 5 or 6 jars going before I threw them all away.
It
made me feel better.
Make you feel better.
Yeah, it made me feel better.
That's Judy's revenge right there.
One of the things I noticed after we did have them, I'd grab, you know, I get petals and those little black things and throw them in a bucket or something. I'd look down and I'd think, well, with all those petals around them, they kind of look pretty. But I let them die too. Oh, Judy. Oh, my goodness. You got to make lemonade with the lemons, don't you? Judy, what roses would you recommend to someone who's just getting started? Many of our Rose Chat listeners are newbies. Some of them are real young to gardening, and some of them are older, but they're just starting again. So what would you recommend to someone getting started?
Well, first I'd ask them, how much sunshine do you have and how much space do you have? But also think vertically as well as the tall ones in the background. And it's really nice to have a designated pathway to kind of stay off the roses. But I visit public gardens near your home and find out what you can't live without. Around Atlanta, there's the Atlanta Botanical Gardens, the Martin Luther King, International Peace Rose Garden. There's Smith-Gilbert Gardens. There's the beautiful Rose Lawn Museum in Cartersville. It's Barnsley Gardens, and Truly Living Well Community Garden is an incredible space in downtown Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
There's historical sites, you know, like Barrington Hall in Roswell, and then there's the lovely Stanton Fernbank Rose Garden. I'd say in the spring, also go to local nurseries and ask questions about what they'll order and what they'll have on hand, so you could really, you know, you do your homework ahead of time and sort of see the ones that you really like. I know which ones that I want to root at from Barrington, and I certainly got a long list of ones I don't want to root because I don't have room for one that's 17 feet tall and 14 feet wide. But, I don't want any.
Well,
I
can enjoy the
way. Right. I've got 10, and that's, you know, they have many, many roses, but I've just got 10 that are the size that I can handle.
Well, now, you know, Judy, listeners of this show, they love to hear stories about people and roses. And one of the stories I wanted to get you to share tonight was about your foray into jewelry making with these rose beads. I know that my wife was the proud recipient of one of these beautiful pieces of a pendant to wear from you, and I know our listeners would enjoy hearing that story.
Yeah, I thought you'd like to ask that question. Yeah, the site is called Rose Petals, but it's an educational and humanities website that's on Facebook. But, that's one of the, well, since I do grow organic roses, so I take they cook for 3 days, then they dry from 6 to 8 weeks. But I took a master gardening class and learned how to turn rose petals into beads. And the original rosaries were made from rose petals, you know, rosaries.
Mm-hmm.
But many of the women who wear the beads, they think they have healing qualities, and they enjoy wearing the jewelry that has the fragrance of roses. So, yeah, the website was to reach out to women that are already working with poppies, and so they would be working with roses instead of poppies. So they could make water or, you know, attar. They could make whatever, some other kind of product from roses instead of working with poppies. But I love making them. It's a lot of fun. Just get a crock pot and cook them down. It takes 3 days. They cook 3 days on and off. So I cook them all day, turn them off at night for 3 days. And then usually I freeze the mud, as I call it, and when I'm ready to use it, I'll pull it out of the freezer, and then I'll start with a smaller batch of little puddles, as I call it. And it does take a while. It's real hands-on, for sure.
They're beautiful. I just went to the Facebook page, and they're just beautiful.
They're not. They have to be oiled and kept in a glass, tightly closed jar. And then if they turn brown, then you'll want to re-oil them, and it'll take bring the fragrance out. I'll send you some, Teresa.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, that, I would love that.
Yeah.
Very special.
Yeah. Well, you know, a handful of people know this part of the story. Back some 8 years ago, I quit my job in the city to come take care of mother, who was not able really to take care of herself because of Alzheimer's and dementia. It was a long 4.5 years of my life and hers, a long, hard, sad journey for both of us. But I like to keep in mind that mother's on the other side of the fence tending the roses.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Her ashes were spread in the rose garden on the oldest roses. And so, you know, after retiring and being a registered nurse at the hospital for over 30 years, mother devoted the rest of her waking hours to roses and gardening. She grew tomatoes as big as a grapefruit and roses upon roses, and she loved her grandchildren, and this was her idea of a great retirement. One of the roses, called Elena, was planted in 1991, the year my daughter was born, whose name, Alina. I really thought everybody had a kind, sweet, and supportive mother like mine until I was about 35. After her passing, I really was at a loss and grief-stricken, and had decided that honoring her with a story about her life with roses was what I wanted to do by writing and documenting and giving, you know, life again to her rose garden. So Virginia Elizabeth Austin, she showed and she grew roses for over 50 years. And she was a leading rosarian in the Atlanta area and with the American Rose Society. She also was one of those trial roses from Jackson Perkins, you know, the number, you get a number. But, mother was very special. She had a beautiful life, actually.
Well, I'll tell you, that's such a touching story. And, you know, the main reason I have the garden I have today is because of my mom. And, you know, I don't think people realize the incredible legacy that our moms and grandmothers, our parents leave us, especially this, what I call a horticultural legacy, you know, that is so precious and so easily passed down.
Her father was an incredible gardener, and he did companion and square foot gardening in 25 years before they wrote the book.
He probably could have written that book, couldn't he?
I know. Yeah. I'd say, well, how'd you get that to grow? And he'd say, well, a shovel of manure and a handful of Epsom salt.
That'll do it, won't it? Well, Judy, before we wrap things up, I wanted to ask you a question we ask many of our guests on Rose Chat, and that's, if you could visit any garden in the world, which one would you pick?
Oh, well, in Italy, there's a garden called the Carla, I think it's Fenice Rose Garden. It's the largest private rose collection in the world, and it's got more than 7,000 rose varieties. It has great biological importance. Plus, Italy would be fantastic. But I guess I'll mosey on up the road to Gibbs Gardens because I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
Chris and I'd be glad to go with you to Italy. You know, we just live not a garden. We don't want to. Yeah, so if you need some companions that just get into it, then give us a call.
You know, I did want to mention that if anybody wants to email me, I'd be glad to give you my email address.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all do that or not, but
go right ahead.
Okay. It's string, STRING, 37 at mindspring.com. Actually, I was thinking 36. Well, spring 36 at mindspring.com. Anyway, you can write me on Facebook. I'm there every day. And thank you, guys. Y'all are so much fun. Y'all have really made this a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
You know, there's just no stopping us when we get together to chat about roses, I tell you.
There just wasn't a clock that we had to answer to. We just talk and talk and talk.
Right.
Well, Judy, thanks again for being our special guest tonight. And I want to remind our listeners that I have placed the link to Judy's Facebook page, The Rose Cottage, out on tonight's show page on Blog Talk Radio. So just go to blogtalkradio.com/rosechat, find tonight's show, and there you'll find the link to Judy's Facebook page. We'll also include a link with Judy's email address on there, too, if you'd like to write her with a specific question. We talked a lot about organic gardening tonight. I want to remind our listeners of our gracious sponsor, Annie Haven, from the Haven brand family of soil conditioners. You can find them online at ManureTea.com and also RoseMania, a company that has all of the supplies for roses that you'll ever need. Find them online at RoseMania.com. Well, we're out of time for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast, and I want to invite you to come back next time when we'll have another guest chatting about roses. So until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.